My grandmother was a woman who did not like to be rushed. She often was late to things, and she often ran out of gas. So much so that my mom had that experience on her way to school so many times that to this very day, my mother will not allow her tank to get under half. It's frustrating at times when you look and you say, no, we're good. And no, she needs that extra comfort that she's going to get there no matter what might happen between the beginning start of the journey and the end start of the journey. So it's in that measured time of not being rushed, as we see it from Elijah today. Elisha would like to go ahead and receive what it is that he might receive and go on into his ministry. But Elijah says, we've got to take our time. We've got some stops to make. We like to think that maybe he's doing some errands before he's on retirement, that he's got some last check boxes that he needs to make on his bucket list. But I think it's also in line with trying to carve out patience in the one who is coming after him. That's what it's like to be going behind a 95-year-old woman oftentimes when she is your grandmother. And there at the end of life, as our bodies continue to slow down, we don't move as quickly as we once did. And so it is with patience that this woman who often did not like to be rushed commanded certain air of authority, especially as I was following after a tall foot ahead of her in height. For she never was a tall woman, my grandmother. But she commanded a stature and a sense of being from a very early age, of which she was one of those people for whom her opinion mattered. Do you know people of this nature? Perhaps some of them are standing in this very room. Their opinion mattered in part because they were held so strongly, and in part because there was not a fear about uttering them. And for a woman in the South who had a strong sense of being, a strong sense of who she was, when she was able to utter those things, you could be both reprimanded in one spirit and also believe that there could be something in which you might become better than you are because you are next to her, because her expectations were such that you felt like you could become something of what she might dream you could be. From a very early age, growing up in Philadelphia, Mississippi, in a time of some deep segregation and a time in which a 5-year-old girl was trying to get the world figured out, how to live into the Bible or how to live into community, she was there at the Methodist church where there were Indians, Choctaw Indians, who continued to live around the city there, a small town, really, and there was nowhere to go to the bathroom. Nowhere in town where they could go and have a time of rest and respite there. And so there was only one place. It was the basement of the Methodist church where the Indians, when they were in town, could come and have that relief. But the women of the church began to meet there, and so the door got locked downstairs. But somehow it kept getting open. And a very, very slight 5-year-old girl had been sneaking down to the basement of the church in order to unlock the door so that those neighbors, those brothers and sisters that she would see around could get in and could do what they needed to do. So it wasn't noticed for quite some time because they certainly didn't think it was such a child that was doing it. And when they found out, she was reprimanded and punished. But right away, she had seen the ways in which she was being taught upstairs in the sanctuaries didn't always trickle down on something other than Sundays. Didn't always trickle down to the other rooms and the other inhabitations of what it means to live out a spiritual life each and every day. I try to understand a little bit about her experience there in Philadelphia, Mississippi, as she continued to press against borders and in her own time continued with her own opinions and that own sense that she held some moral authority, kept on unlocking doors and making a way, crossing over thresholds in sometimes subtle, but often very subversive ways. She was an English teacher in high school and a strict grammarian like no other. Can you imagine sending thank you notes to this woman? I expected them to come back with red ink or something. She's that kind of teacher. Perhaps you've had this teacher for whom she was very strict and very tough. But that toughness came out of a belief that you could be the very best student that you could be. And so although you would get through and you'd be like, that was the hardest teacher I ever had. As my parents, my mom and my aunt went through her belongings after she died in May, all of the stack of letters that she had received from her students over the years was a testament to those who really did want to make a change and continue to be what they could be. She may have been the very hardest teacher they had, but she was also the very best teacher they had. I think Elijah is the very best teacher, not because he's a man of a lot of comfort and a lot of empathy necessarily oozing from him, but because when asked, the mentor can allow the mentee to follow along. And as they come to the point in which it's time for the mentor to go over to the other side, the mentee has a sense, although the responsibility of taking on the world after Elijah has gone is so terribly big, that Elijah has planted the way for that to happen. A belief that Elijah could step into that role, and a belief that Elisha could do great things in his own right. It wasn't easy, friends, when I went to Jackson, Mississippi 2 weeks ago to stand in my grandmother's church, this place where she held quite authority as the Altar Guild chair for a very long time. She often went to Bible study, and she wasn't leading, but she was leading. You know how that goes? And so there were legendary stories that could populate that room, and I was so touched when one student from 50 years ago showed up, and I said, oh, have you been keeping up with my grandmother? He said, no, she just meant that much to me when I saw her name in the paper. I had to be there. The pressure. The pressure of being the granddaughter of this woman and the daughter of one of her tremendous children. The pressure to then stand at the pulpit in this church of which had meant so very much to her. The pressure to stand there and know that I could look out and see all of the faces of those who had countless stories of this colorful woman and the opinions that she had held. And the holy privilege it was to share from my own experience that somehow in my bones I had certainly not only been made better by this woman, but the privilege of holding some of her and just who I am. Do you have these people in your own lineage, the physicality of the DNA of it? Or perhaps you've been adopted into it in one way or another and feel a responsibility to live into some certain moral courage because of what has been through them. And the pressure. Did I mention the pressure? Wanting to do it right. Just like those students who so many years had sat in her classroom and wanted to do it right. She had set up every single part of her memorial service on paper, as I know some of you have done. But when it came to who was going to preach, she didn't have that person because she just assumed it would be the pastor of the church she was attending. But she had no longer attended that church for some time when she had moved to Memphis. And so when it came time for that pastor, do you want to lead this? And he said, if there's somebody in the family, I know you'll have a lot of preachers, would like to do it, you can. And that's when I received the call. And I have to say that through that process, there was kind of a sleepless night. I look at my husband because I was up too late one night in particular, trying to ask my grandmother what I should do and what I should say. And I'm happy to report that some moment, maybe it was that threshold moment, maybe it was like a chariot of fire in which she could go on to glory and to what God would call her to in the great beyond, felt a deep sense where it was important, the expectations she had for me, and I could live into those, but also that the greatest way that I could honor her was to take those expectations and also be liberated from them into who God has called me to be. Because that's what she had done from the earliest start of things at age 5. She found that the expectations that other people had for her, some of them needed to be internalized, and some of those needed to be combated against. Don't we find that today, that some laws, although legal in nature, are unjust? Sometimes there are ways in which we still have to speak some truth to power, as Elijah did throughout his ministry, and as Elisha took that up. And we can't always live in the Elijah days of living into what was. But just as we, a Jubilee church, are looking into the next steps, we have to trust that the legacy is deep and rich and in our bones and made up of all kind of moral courage. But that as great as Elijah has been, there's a know-how that is planted in each one of us in our current place and time. And it is through that know-how, both with the expectation and the strength of where we've been, that we have to apply what we know to be those for whom our opinion matters. Can you imagine what it means to be church, in which the opinion of our body, as we seek to live in the pathway of the one like Christ who welcomed all, it not only matters what your opinion is as a part of this great body. A year ago, you got in a huge circle and you went around with a microphone and talked about enabling ministers. Somehow I'm here today. And I'm grateful to be, because I believe those opinions matter, not because they're always gentle. Often they are. But because who you are and who God has called you to be matters. And I would venture to say that of this community as well. As we continue to navigate this way after the chariots of Jubilee have gone off, the mantle is cast to us. And with our opinion mattering so much amongst us, we can trust that we can be a beacon of that moral courage for our community and for that larger world, in which we know the legacy runs deep and strong. We can take our time living into it, but not through gradualism. We take our time because we believe in God's steady presence with us along each step. But there is a moral imperative, as my grandmother did on the school board integrating schools in the early 1970s. There is a moral imperative to face and to confront the bigotry as we find it today. This is our moral imperative, friends, because your opinion matters and yours, and because our collective opinion matters as we live into our spiritual legacy and the commitment by which we would be Kitimukundi, the gathering place where we come to be filled and we go out to serve. Amen.